Hello, I'm Sam Breakgear, podcast specialist here at Publicize, and you're listening to The Loudspeaker.
This first tip for every fintech startup is...
What are the media and press saying about us? How are we being perceived by these people?
PR stunts are any activities that allow you to engage with the audience.
I don't agree with the fact that all publicity is good publicity.
Here is where we talk to communications professionals from all around the world to let you know what are the best practices and cool ideas that you can implement for your startup.
Would you be able to tell our listeners who you are and what you do, please, Joanne?
My name's Joanne Martin. I'm VP of Marketing at SearchSpring. SearchSpring is an e-commerce search and merchandising platform. I am responsible for the growth of SearchSpring, so I have a wonderful team of marketers and storytellers who I work alongside.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you so much. And as you know, this episode is all about storytelling in PR, something I know that you're passionate about. And I would love to start off by understanding, in your opinion, why is it important to look at PR from the perspective of storytelling?
Sure. So it's always been said that people read what they enjoy reading. Sometimes that ends up being PR or advertising. Many great marketers have said that. You can't attribute it to me, but it is something that I live by. I think there is enough boring PR out there, PR that doesn't have personality or narrative, doesn't consider the reader, really only considers the fact that they've checked the box in terms of releasing a story that the company or investors might find interesting. I think now it's so important because there's so much information out there that weaving a story in your public relations or your marketing as a whole creates a much more entertaining, much more personal and relatable story for readers.
Yeah, definitely. And you're absolutely right. There's way too much information out there to really like spend your time looking at something which just is not worth it. It's not related to PR particularly, but just in content in general. If I'm ever on Netflix and I'm looking for a film, before I ever watch the film, I will always look up the Rotten Tomatoes score. And I have a threshold of like, if it's not over like 70%, I'm not watching it, because there's way too much content for me to lend my time to something which doesn't have those reviews. And I think it's the exact same for like almost anything that we find ourselves watching or listening to. It's like we have such a high expectation for like how it will entertain us or how we will enjoy it, that if it just doesn't meet this like new, very high threshold, then it's just going to be like, no, next, scroll past it. So,
right.
Yeah,
and we're in B2B technology. And so I think sometimes in SaaS or in B2B technology, we rely on whether or not we stand out from direct competitors. So as marketers, we like to have our little competitive matrix and we have our differentiating points, and we can say, oh, brand X, their tone is this, so our tone is going to be opposite, so we stand out. But there have been so many conversations I have with marketers where I say, yes, but you're also competing with Netflix, to use your example, for mindshare. If I'm a reader, and I want to read a blog about my job as a merchandiser or a customer experience developer, then I'm not just trying to weigh my time between two companies' blogs. I'm trying to decide whether I want to go for a walk with my kids or spend 30 minutes reading about a certain technology, or if I want to catch up on Queer Eye on Netflix. There's so many different opportunities I have to inform or entertain myself that it's not limited to your direct sphere. And I think companies lose sight of that sometimes. And so as a marketer, I always aim to be more entertaining, if possible, than Netflix. Like if I can't be more entertaining than something actually entertaining that people pay to be entertained by, then it's much more likely that I'm going to be drowned out, even if my message is relevant.
Yeah, that's a good goal to set, to be like the most entertaining as possible. But like, would you be able to give examples of what you consider good and effective storytelling and what you think that looks like?
Sure. I'm still learning. So I would love to learn from other marketers on this as well. I think good and effective storytelling, one, considers the reader. You're never going to tell a story that's effective to everyone. There's a reason that there are different genres in the world. There are different languages, different story arcs. Even if you look at classic literature, there's such a wide array of storytelling styles that you can't just find one good storytelling methodology, if that makes sense. So the first thing is considering the audience and the person you want to relate to. That's pretty standard marketing practice anyway, but I think it's effective in storytelling as well. The second part is that I'm learning more and more now is you can't rely on the cliche. There's a great book by an author named Annie Dillard. She's famous for writing Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. She also wrote a book called Living by Fiction. And in that book, she talks about how authors or poets sometimes try to rely on stories or events that will naturally evoke emotion. So death will naturally evoke emotion within a reader. But it's kind of cheap storytelling because you know that death is a weighty topic for the reader. Whereas if you can actually evoke emotion from something unique, like a chair or the color of a wall or the way a flower exists, then you're actually creating a much more sustainable and relatable story. And so I think that's important in business as well. And to kind of create a cheap comparison, I, as a marketer, can tell the story about better efficiency or cost reduction or conversion rate increase. Those are really good points and they're relatable business points, but they're kind of the cheap narratives we rely on as B2B SaaS marketers sometimes. Whereas if I can actually create a story around the way a digital or visual merchandiser might interact with a website and their hopes and dreams for building a brand, then maybe I can create a more sustainable narrative with my reader. So that's something I'm exploring lately. I don't know all the answers to it, and I'm trying to reach within different genres and even writers to understand how great storytellers do that.
Yeah, and I think it's complex. Being a good storyteller is not an easy skill, I would say. Mm-hmm. Maybe to some people it comes more naturally, but at the same time, it's definitely like a very beneficial skill to have. And I also agree with your first point that you made when you said about like targeting it to your audience or making sure it resonates with the audience that you want it to. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing which I've definitely learned with PR, certainly from doing this podcast, is the sense that like not all PR is good PR or like beneficial PR. So you could have something which is out on a very large publication, but it might not have the same impact as if you were to have the spotlight on you on a niche publication, which perfectly sums up your audience and the people that you're going after. Mm-hmm. So just like you said, storytelling is definitely important and you want to identify your like genre or your niche when going after PR. But storytelling itself is kind of something which is a bit esoteric. And obviously, like you've mm-hmm. mentioned, there's certain like metrics that we measure and like certain business terms, and it's kind of blending something which is kind of more creative and artsy with something like business, which is more kind of facts and figures. How can storytelling be measured with clear KPIs and targets, do you think?
That is a great question and something I haven't cracked yet. I do rely on media companies as inspiration for great PR or storytelling measures. So whereas tech marketers often want to measure everything by marketing qualified leads or pipeline created, which is a great measure for marketing and something I fully back, by the way, when you're telling a story and you're creating affinity with your brand and you're trying to build this narrative that people relate to, I do think you have to rely on different metrics because your goal isn't always to get someone to schedule a demo, for example. So I rely on things like audience building, audience engagement, virality. So are people engaging with our content and are they sharing it? They find it so entertaining, they have to send it to a friend. Those are the types of targets that I rely on. I'm looking for new ways to measure that. I look at a lot of companies like The Ringer, for example, which here in the US is a big media company that historically focused on sports, but does a lot of pop culture content as well. And they're great storytellers and they have a lot of really great metrics that they base their success on. And a lot of them are very traditional media or online media based metrics.
Yeah. I feel that in a way, kind of podcasting is somewhat similar. Mm-hmm. We have our basic metrics, which is like subscribers and listeners, but at the same time, it really is focused around storytelling. And yeah. I feel that like to understand like the impact you have through your storytelling, you need to go so much further. And you're absolutely right when you mentioned like engagement. So that is definitely something which I think, whether it comes to like PR or podcasting or many kind of forms of media which you put out there to promote your story. It really does depend on like how much engagement you receive. And obviously that can be harder to measure than simple like listeners or views.
If you're interested in seeing how Publicize can grow your startup, sign up for a free PR assessment on our website. And for a limited time only and exclusive to the Loudspeaker listeners, we're giving subscribers a month free on a 12-month Publicize contract. To find out more, visit publicize.co/lspromo. That's publicize.co/lspromo.
I think the best measure of storytelling, which is anecdotal, so it drives someone like me crazy who wants a chart and a graph for everything, is when you hear someone tell that story back to you. Mm. And you can't measure that necessarily. You could measure it in share of voice in some ways on certain key topics or themes. If you've built a category around your brand, and people use Drift as an example for this quite often because they built conversational marketing and that, and inserted themselves in that category, became the leader. I can imagine that as a marketer at Drift, when I started hearing people outside of my company talk about conversational marketing and tell the story around that without just sharing my content, I would consider that storytelling success because I've been able to build this story around the fact that forms in marketing are dead. It is not the most efficient process. It doesn't match how customers want to buy. And therefore, conversational marketing is the future. If I'm at Drift and I hear an analyst or I hear a marketer in a different industry start posting on LinkedIn or writing blogs about that story, then I've considered it a success. Unfortunately, I can't necessarily put that on an Excel chart and show it to my board. But obviously you see massive success out of that and the story tells itself.
Out of interest, like I'm not familiar with Drift. Like, would you be able to tell me how they work and how this kind of unique form of marketing works and how they can measure, like, was it conversational marketing?
Conversational marketing, yeah. So Drift, I've never worked for Drift, so I will try to speak on their behalf to the best of my ability. It started out effectively as a live chat technology. Mm-hmm. So something similar to Intercom in a lot of ways, where you land on a website and there's a chat bot in the corner. But live chat was nothing new. There were a lot of companies in that space that were providing live chat on websites. And what the marketers at Drift did, which now has become just massively successful, is that they said, this isn't live chat. This is conversational marketing. It's a way for you to convert visitors faster, to speak to your customers faster. And as opposed to filling out a form on your website to download an ebook, and then a day later, they're contacted by sales, and then a week later, you have a meeting. On the live chat now, that entire marketing process happens conversationally, as opposed to a form and a series of steps afterward. So that's the very summarized view of Drift. But they have a lot of great marketers. They've built and told a lot of great stories over the past couple of years. So definitely check them out. Take a look at
nice.
It.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds like they've really smoothed out that process there. Yeah. On them. So before our call, like you mentioned that character development is important when it comes to PR storytelling. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how this works?
Sure. And this, I think, is the cornerstone to all great storytelling. Great stories rarely happen without great characters. One of the key things, I think, is to create a character that your target audience can relate to or kind of place themselves within. Think of most great movies. You have a lot of different character types, and typically there's someone in that movie that you see yourself relating to. So if you're watching Batman, then you're like, oh, yeah, I'm totally Batman. I could do that. I am the superhero. Or maybe you're the Joker, and we can talk about that later.
But I think I'm more Alfred.
See, exactly. Everyone has that type they relate to. But when you're telling a story around a business, you want to place your user within that hero role in the story. If not the hero, at least the sidekick in some way. So I think it's important to be able to build that character in a way that your audience can relate to. But great characters typically have really interesting quirks. So you could build a character that is Batman, and he's a superhero, he's perfect in every way. But if you actually read Batman comics or watch any of the more recent movies, Batman has a lot of weird quirks as a character. Like, someone thought that his background, he's afraid of bats, obviously, because of his childhood. And then he has this alter ego, and his alter ego has all sorts of just personality quirks and ways he speaks and acts. And I'll provide one example of this. And I can't even remember the title of the book, but there's a book where there's a woman who's the main character. And the author could describe the woman as saying she's 5 feet tall and has brown hair. Or the author could describe the character as being slightly self-conscious. She wears a green sweater and always tugs at the sleeves. Her favorite color is purple, but not standard purple, just that weird, awkward color purple when no one knows whether it's blue or purple. The second character provides a lot more context and makes me relate with her more because she has so much depth, so many quirks. And I think that's core to telling a great story, even in marketing. I'll give an example of how we do that at Search Spring. Mm-hmm. And I'll actually provide a more recent example. We have an amazing customer called Wildfang. And we really recently did a story about Wildfang because, one, they're a customer of ours. Two, mm-hmm. we absolutely love their brand because they've built a brand that is very unique. It's very cause-driven. They build a community around their brand that's vibrant and relatable. And we just absolutely love them. Their CEO, Emma, has been excellent working with us to tell this story. But there are two ways we could have told this story. We could have issued a press release that said, Wildfang chooses Search Spring for search and merchandising technology. And maybe a couple people would have read it and they're like, okay, cool, Wildfang chose Search Spring. It's another press release. That's great. Or we could tell the story by talking about Emma and how she thought about building Wildfang as a brand, about how she cares about her community. Their mission when they set out to build the brand was to create a home for badass women everywhere. So she has a very strong brand identity around that. And we were able to really highlight Emma and what she's built around this brand and talk more about that and more about how she saw Search Spring and was able to implement it to achieve her goals. And I thought it created a much more relatable and inspiring story. If I'm building an e-commerce brand, I don't necessarily care about a press release where someone announces a new customer. People are announcing new customers all the time. I do care about my competitor, who I can probably relate to, by the way, as a fellow e-commerce CEO, who probably is facing a lot of the same challenges I do, has a lot of the same stresses every day, who wants so badly to succeed and has so much vision for this brand you're building. So as another e-commerce company, I'm able to relate to that very personally. So while Emma is obviously not a character, she's a real person, we're able to elevate her and tell her story. And I think it's a really beautiful way of showing how we actually empower our customers.
Yeah. And I think showing Emma in that light definitely shows her with more depth. Like you said, it relates back to your telling a character like with the jumper story. It's more memorable and it's more relatable. To me, is more preferable in the moment, but also it resonates with you more and stays in your memory. The one example of this, when I was first learning like how powerful storytelling can be, it's really ironic because it really sums up the point. There was two options. There was one piece of information that was very factual, and I can't remember what it is, which obviously shows the point that there was no story around it. It was just a piece of information. The second one delivered a piece of information in the form of a story. And it said that initially the Earl Duke of Sandwich used to play cards in the UK. I can't remember when this was, many, many years ago. And to stop his hands getting greasy from eating meat, he would put two slices of bread on either side. And that's apparently where the term sandwich comes from him playing cards and putting his slices of meat in between two pieces of bread. And he was the Earl Duke of Sandwich in the UK. And I've always remembered that story, and I cannot remember the other fact that was presented. And I think that perfectly sums up and shows when you implement good storytelling, you implement some kind of depth, then you're far more likely to remember it and also just be interested in hearing it in the first place.
Yeah. Have you recently watched the Michael Jordan documentary that came out?
I have not, but everyone keeps going on about it, so I should probably make some time for it.
You should definitely watch it. It does a great job of really adhering to that idea. Obviously, Michael Jordan is legendary, epically legendary. And so there, you don't need to tell another story about Michael Jordan. He's already the best. It's timely as more and more people debate that, but it is really interesting how you can either say Michael Jordan is the best and it will stay in people's mind because of all of the statistics that prove he's the best, or you can tell a really colorful story about his work ethic, about who he was as a teammate, about how he motivated himself to be more competitive. And those two things are very different, but even watching my 8-year-old son, who wants to be in the NBA when he grows up, watch this documentary, he now believes fully that Michael Jordan is the best player who ever lived. And no one will be able to convince him otherwise, no matter how many conversations come up about LeBron or Kobe and all of the ways that they might challenge that perception. He is now Michael Jordan all the way because he was able to see who Michael Jordan was as a person. And he related to that more, aside from being told, oh, Michael Jordan is the best.
That's beautiful. And yeah, I think that when you have a good story about someone, it humanizes them and you can relate to it. Then you have another fan. And certainly in business terms, your fans, your greatest marketers. So yeah, that's a really nice story, I think, to end on. And I just want to say thank you so much for joining me today. Joanne, if people want to learn about Search Spring, what's the best way to do that? Do you have social media they can follow or a website they can go to?
We do. Our website is searchspring.com. We are on Twitter and LinkedIn if you search for us there. I'm also on LinkedIn, Joanne Martin. If you search, I would love to speak to you if you want to reach out and talk more about storytelling.
Excellent. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Joanne. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.